Let's talk about movies. This is Kenny from my brain. If you wanna talk movies, well, guess what? We on the same thing. You gotta watch this podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to You Have to Watch This Podcast. I'm Alan.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Devin.
And I'm guessing the order looks weird on screen right now.
It does a bit.
But yeah, we are here. We are live a few hours earlier than usual, but still later than what we wanted. So today we're talking about the romantic comedy Crazy Stupid Love, which neither of these guys have seen. So it was my pick. But before we get into that, we have some stuff that we talk about at the top of the show, things that we've seen over the last week. Devin put the show in order today. What is up first?
So the first one is I would like to know what Ryan has been watching this week.
Okay. So this is going to be kind of awkward. So I had no idea that the show 100 even existed, or The 100 existed, until like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And I was like, oh, a new season of this show. It's on Netflix. So I was like, I'll watch the first season. This, you know, this looks kind of interesting. And for the first, like, half, the first episode, I was like, this is a dumb premise. This is really dumb. This is cheap. But it's just interesting enough that I'll give it a chance. And it sucked me in for about 8 episodes. And then I was done.
Wow.
So for people who don't know, The 100 was, to my surprise, a WB or CW show. CW.
CW, yes.
Which I've given a lot of flack, that channel and their style of shows. I've given a lot of flack in the past. And yes, it's still deserved. But Space Station in space, they believe they are the only humans left alive because of nuclear war hundreds of years earlier. They have a bunch of juveniles that they send down to Earth to see if it's healthy enough to stay on the planet because adults do stupid things on space stations. And teenage youth cause chaos on the planet's surface to the adults up at the space station. And I got as far as to where they discover shrooms. And that's when I started.
Oh, no. Oh, is this... So you don't like it? Is that why you wanted to talk about it?
It was just a question that we, you know, every week Alan asks, hey, guys, what have you been watching? I'm like, oh, The 100. And at that point, when I originally thought about talking about it, I was still into the show.
Oh. Did they lose you at shrooms? Is that what happened?
Like, the episodes were okay. They really were. It was a decent balance of, like, your like, typical CW corniness. But it was enough decent sci-fi to keep me going.
Okay.
And then they just got to episodes with just some, like, ridiculousness. And, like, normal CW, like, love triangles and drama, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that stuff. It's just the way that CW does it.
It's just very much their brand of things.
And Alan, then Shrooms came along, and I just...
You were like, no more.
Lost. Yeah.
So, before I give my opinion, would the show have been better for you if you were on Shrooms?
I think I would have given up on a quick, a faster if I had any type of, like, hindrance to my cognitive abilities.
Got it. Yeah, the CW definitely has its own style of show making. I'm watching two shows in the CW now because there's only two DC shows left. And that's The Flash and Superman and Lois. Superman and Lois, they actually put some effort into and, like, shoot it with anamorphic lenses and it looks very good. It's a beautiful show.
Wow.
The Flash they've kind of given up on, and they just announced The Flash is going into its final season of 13 episodes. So they're bringing that story to an end. They're not just like canceling it like they did everything else that was CW DC shows. And then they have a Gotham Knights show that looks horrible that I cannot wait to hate watch. But yeah, CW is its own style of show. I've been interested in The 100 because of some of the actors I know show up on it.
Yeah.
Like Henry Ian Cusick from Lost, who played Desmond.
Oh, that's fun.
He's one of the, I think he's the one in charge on the space station, and he ends up coming to Earth.
Yeah.
But beyond that, like, it's been on my list. I'll probably hold off on it a little bit longer now that Brian's given his opinion.
Well, I mean, it got 8 episodes in, it got a little repetitive of big, important, you know, life-threatening thing. We fixed it, but then other big life-threatening thing pops up, and then they have to tackle that, and then another issue pops up, and then after, like, the third run-through of that, like, routine that they had in the storyline, then each individual character started having their own, like, crises at the same time as the big crisis was going on. And then when the shrooms hit, I was literally thinking to myself, what are they going to do now after this? And then, oh, we're going to put everyone on shrooms with the, you know, danger lurking outside the gate now. Like, oh, stop, please.
Where do you go from shrooms? But...
Crack.
It's true. That's true.
I mean, I watched the previews and I read some of the descriptions from like season 3 and 4. So I know where they go from shrooms, but it's whatever. I mean, I might pick it up again. I'm not sure, but I have problems with the way CW does their stuff. It's just, it's not my thing.
I mean, it's fair. They have a style. I mean, I think the one show that Alan had mentioned that like Lois and Superman or whatever, Superman and Lois, that like on its premise sounds awful to me, but it sounds like Alan, they put more work into it than anything.
Well, do you want a segue? Because I can take this into a segue.
Let's do it right now.
So Superman and Lois is like, just from the title, it doesn't sound interesting, but it's Superman and Lois raising teenage boys, and like so it's got, like, it takes me back to Smallville, ironically enough. One of them has powers, the other one doesn't. So there's like resentment there. And then there's, it's fairly interesting for a Superman show. The one thing they don't have though on Superman and Lois is Krypto the Super Dog. But if you want to see Krypto the Super Dog, or hear about it, I can tell you a little bit about, League of Super Pets.
Look at that transition. That was buttery smooth.
Yeah.
We're so good.
So yeah, part of the reason I was running late today is I took my niece to see DC's League of Super Pets, and it was the most expensive movie experience I've paid for in a long time.
Tell us why.
I got a flat tire going to the theater.
Oh.
Luckily, the movie theater I went to was like right near a Sam's Club, so I just had to work it out and get my car over there after the movie. Got it all squared away, but I had to buy a new tire, so that was not counting on that today. But enough about that. Like, that's all that's all done and taken care of. Let's talk about League of Super Pets, because I really enjoyed this movie.
Did you?
I am not a huge fan of Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Kevin Hart doing their shtick. But this wasn't really their shtick. Like, they're both in it. I think their shtick more comes in with the marketing of the movie. This has got a phenomenal cast. Like I said, Dwayne Johnson as Krypto, Kevin Hart as Ace, the Bat Hound, Natasha Lyonne, Diego Luna, who's going to be in Andor. I'm forgetting the one's name. She was on SNL for years. Kate McKinnon's the villain. But then you have John Krasinski as Superman, Keanu Reeves as Batman. It's a very fun kids movie, but it's also got some very fun adult moments. Like, there are moments where, like, so Natasha Lyonne plays a turtle who gets super speed. And there's a moment like they're fighting the bad guy, and she just speeds off like fighting the bad guys and just ends up in a park. And she straight up says, where the F am I? But they bleep it. And they did that to her like 2 or 3 times in the movie. Like, she just swears and they just bleep it. Like, that's an interesting take for a kid's movie.
Yeah.
But they do a good job with the Superman origin story and including Krypto in that. The animation style is pretty cool. My niece enjoyed it. She was laughing the whole time. I asked her who her favorite animal was. She said the turtle. So she loved Natasha Lyonne's character. Aww. And I think she really did steal the movie a bit. Kate McKinnon's being Kate McKinnon, and it was just kind of like evil super animal. But there are some fun Easter eggs in here. Like every time there's like a news show on, the headline is something funny. Like the one I laughed at, my niece made me explain it to her. Mm-hmm. Lex Luthor gets arrested at one point in the film, and the headline is super rich actually goes to jail.
That's fun.
But other than that, I thought it was enjoyable. Like there's some fun musical cues that I picked up on, because they tell the origin of Superman. So they show Krypton explode. Alfred Molina plays Jor-El, which is weird, but and weird. I did not expect. But I was like, that's definitely Doc Ock right now. they use the John Williams Planet Krypton theme.
Oh wow!
When Krypton's destroyed, they do the Superman theme a few times. The Crypto actually sings it at one point, which is weird. Oh. But yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Hold on. So treat me like I'm dumb. What are the Super Pets origin story? Like, what is? So does Superdog or Crypto come with Clark Kent?
Yeah.
Like in the
well,
pod?
Well, in this he does.
Okay.
He jumps in the pod. Like Jor-El and his wife are like, no. And then he jumps in the pod as the door closes. And Jor-El's wife, I forget her name. She's like, just he's going to need a friend. Like, so they come to Earth and like they're best friends. That's Krypto's origin story. In this, I think it's different in other stories that you read. I'm not sure what the comic book origin is, but I know like on Smallville, he was a kryptonite infected dog.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Ryan looks skeptical.
Yeah. I mean, my only skeptical, like, okay, so Krypton's going to explode or implode, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They have a family pet. They have a dog. They're about to send their son in a rocket to be supposed to be the only surviving one on the planet to survive the blast. What kind of a selfish people want their pet to also die with them in the explosion and not initially put the dog in the rocket with their son? I mean, like that. I mean, that might be the millennial in me speaking. The fact that I see pets like children. So I mean, you know,
I don't know.
Okay. From the other side of this, how much food did you pack in there, and how long until Krypto starts looking at baby Clark as a snack?
Oh, whatever.
Is that too?
Take care of himself.
Okay, I do want to see this movie though. I mean, I don't know that I'll rush out to theaters to see it, but I think I definitely want to wait till it's like on HBO Max or something, so it looks like it's something that'll go there. But like, this looks like a fun, like I'm bored on a Saturday thing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other actress I couldn't remember was Vanessa Bayer.
Okay.
She plays the pig. Marc Maron making an appearance as a voiceover actor again as Lex Luthor. Thomas Middleditch, Ben Schwartz. That's why those voices sound familiar. They have a fun bit in the movie.
Aw, I bet they do.
But yeah, they've got a pretty great cast throughout this whole thing. So,
is it basically just the Justice League, but each pet is a different like power, or is there like one pet that's very much not a Justice League character?
So the only two that are based off of actual characters in the comic books, as far as I know, are Krypto and Ace.
Okay.
The other ones are kind of just like, by the end of the movie, they all pair up with somebody in the Justice League.
Oh.
Like the turtle like becomes friends with the Flash.
And of course.
The pig becomes she's already a fangirl of Wonder Woman. Oh. So like they become close, but.
Cute.
I enjoyed it. I didn't stay for the post credit scene because Dwayne Johnson posted it, like images of it on his Instagram on Sunday. So I was like, oh, I don't need to see this now because I know that Black Adam and his dog show up. I'm like, really? You're just going to use this to promote the.
Fair.
So, but my niece wanted to leave the theater. Like we walked out at one point during the final battle because she had to go to the bathroom. I was like, really now? Like, but. When you gotta go, you gotta go. We didn't miss much. We came back. The evil guinea pig was giant. I was like, okay, we're doing like this is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it was a good time. I recommend it. if you've got kids and like superheroes. There's a lot of fun stuff for adults in here too. Keanu Reeves as Batman though is pretty fun. So.
Oh, I bet. So, speaking of things that were relevant in the 80s and are now relevant now, I don't know. I'm drawing a transition. How was that one?
I'll give it a 5.
Perfect. That was what I was aiming for. We have my We Watch This for the week. Because, guys, I actually watched something, but it's not a TV or movie, so sorry about that. I watched Heathers the Musical. So this was a West End production at The Other Palace. It is, my guess is, a retelling of the Heathers movie. I actually have never seen Heathers, so I don't know how faithful of a recreation the plot of this was. My guess is there isn't singing. But our lead actor looked a lot like Winona Ryder, so that made me very happy. But all in all, this musical was an amazing time. I had so much fun with this. I wasn't expecting the plot. Nobody told me what Heathers was about before I watched this. I just saw like the poster that you see kind of down there, where it's essentially just like the three of them standing with cricket mallets or croquet mallets. And I didn't know where the plot was going. And oh boy, did it go in some places. I know not all of us have seen Heathers, but Ryan, you've seen Heathers before, right?
It's been a long time.
Yeah,
I have, but it's been a long time. I was not expecting the movie to go where it went.
Okay, good. Okay, same.
Like 11 when I saw it.
Yeah.
And I haven't really seen it since. So, I mean, that might say something about how I originally thought of it as like a preteen. But
sure.
I mean, maybe if I watch it again now, I'd probably get a lot more of it than I did when I was 11. So, yeah.
Well, we might end up doing like just Heathers for the show at some point, because I was very, very like, I'm very much into the musical. I've been listening to the music just about all week. I absolutely love several of the songs. If you guys want a sense of what the humor and the kind of musicality that goes behind the song, look up the song Candy Store, because it's just, it's basically the show in a nutshell. But man, I was so impressed with this, and it makes me want to watch it, like watch the actual movie. So I think we're going to just do it for the podcast, especially because it does go into a relatively unexpected place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Devin, I was testing out the chat here. You can go ahead and hide the chat window.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha. Let me just do that. Get out of here, chat box. Nailed it.
So one last thing I wanted to ask you guys.
Yeah.
I know Devin watches, though. I don't think Ryan does. Are you caught up on Better Call Saul?
I am.
Did you watch last night's?
No, actually, I guess I'm not then. I thought I was. How was last night's? Was it good?
You know the title of it, right?
Breaking Bad.
Yeah. There's a reason for that. Yeah, I made the analogy yesterday. Like bringing in the characters from Breaking Bad is kind of, I said to my wife, it's like if on Power Rangers in space, they brought in the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers only with Bryan Cranston. And I was like, wait, no, Bryan Cranston was in Power Rangers. Never mind. It's the same thing. But yeah, it was fun. I'm excited. I feel like at the end of the series, you and I are just gonna have to do a mini episode. Talking
I think
about
we will.
It with a friend of the show, Josh from Nerf Herders Assemble.
Oh, perfect.
So, because he keeps messaging me about it, and I haven't gotten back to him yet, but...
Sorry. Yeah, because I got to talk to someone about it, because in this apartment, I'm the only one that watches it and is current with it. And when things happen, I just want to tell someone about the thing I saw, and there's, like, nobody here to talk to. So yeah. I really want to talk about it. And I'm also curious how it's going to end, because... What was it? Not this episode, not last episode, but the one before. I thought that was how it was going to end. So I'm very curious with what they're doing with the rest of the season, because how many episodes do we still have? Is it 3?
2.
I don't.
Two episodes left.
I don't get it.
Yeah. We'll talk about it. We'll talk
about
it.
Okay, good.
Ryan looks bored. So I think we're going to get into today's main topic.
Perfect.
The 2011 film. Crazy Stupid Love, starring Ryan Gosling and Steve Carell, with Julianne Moore and Emma Stone. This is a film that I have seen many years ago on like HBO. I never saw this in theaters, but it had a good enough cast. I was like, I'll check this out. So this has been one of my wife and I's go to like romantic comedies, at least of the modern ones. It also features Marissa Tomei, John Carroll Lynch, Josh Groban for some reason, and like I said, I had seen this years ago on like HBO when it first premiered there. What did you guys think of Crazy Stupid Love? Because this is the first time you've seen it. Ryan, you have more familiarity with romantic comedies. How did you feel about this before we get into Devin's thoughts?
Well, actually, I had seen this before. I completely forgot about it.
Well, then never mind. Okay. So why did you think that you didn't see it? Is there a reason, or?
Because my feelings towards it after the first time I watched it, I didn't even remember its name.
Oh no.
So when you said the title, I just was like, yeah, no, that doesn't sound familiar at all. And then when it got to the scene where Steve Carell wanted to jump out of the car, I was like, right there with you.
Okay. All right. Devin, what, you're more of a novice to romantic comedies. What did you think of this one?
This movie was a roller coaster for me, guys. Okay, so there were times when I was watching this movie and I went, this might be the best movie I've seen in a long time. And then there are times when I watch this movie and I go, this is a stupid movie and I don't want to watch any more of this. And it, the whole time, up and down, up and down. I think that in the end, if we had cut Steve Carell completely from the movie, I would have absolutely loved this movie. I think that is my like overall feeling from it, because Steve Carell's character gets every rom-com tropey annoying thing that made me annoyed, and Ryan Gosling's character got all of the parts that I just absolutely loved. I mean, this movie made me love Emma Stone even more than I already love Emma Stone. Marissa Tomei more than I love Marissa Tomei. I mean, I want to talk about a lot of this movie, especially the parts that made me hate it, but then even more the parts that made me love it.
Okay. So let's dive into the Steve Carell character, because he is the main character of the thing. He is the one who has the story arc that is like full circle.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, what don't you like about his, what don't you guys like about his character?
Well, for me, it's not that I don't like his character. It's just this movie kind of embodies why I don't really watch a lot of modern comedy dramas.
Okay.
I'm not a fan. There's just something about the like movies like Crazy Stupid Love that just don't appeal to me and I do not connect with. And it might be I honestly can't really nail it down, so maybe today we might do that for me.
Hold on one second. Okay. Devin, check the audio settings in the chat. Bill can only hear you. Make sure we're coming in through desktop audio.
Yeah, give me one second here. That was probably duplicate me. Go ahead and say something quick.
Testing 1, 2.
Yeah, I think there you guys are. Ryan, say something.
Okay.
Okay. Am I coming through now?
Yeah, hey, you good? Awesome. Thank you, chat.
All right, we should be fixed now. Thank you, friend of the show, Bill. I owe you.
Okay. So I mean, I'm not entirely sure. Like, was it Game Night, Alan? You had us watch.
Yes.
Was that a rom-com?
I wouldn't say it's a rom-com.
Okay.
But,
I'd say it has elements of a rom-com, but I wouldn't call it a rom-com.
But, like, that is still kind of like a comedy drama, like, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And this being, like, a rom-com drama, like, there's something about these more modern movies. And whenever I see a cast listing that has Ryan Gosling, Steve Carell, Emma Stone, like, that kind of like a combination of people or even like the two lead actors who were in Game Night. Like I don't instantly blow it off, but like I'll watch the trailer and I'm like, okay, that's got that feel. That's got that, like, it's giving me that feeling of just, this is going to fall flat for me.
Hmm.
And there's moments in this movie I love that I find hysterical. Don't get me wrong. It's okay. Just, this isn't really a movie that I'm ever like, this is like, this movie's like flyover country for me in a way.
Devin, what don't you like about Steve Carell in particular?
Okay, so Steve Carell has all of my like stereotypic like I don't love this rom-com moments. It has the "we're gonna teach you how to be hip with the ladies" like montage, and the whole like "we're gonna teach you how to buy clothes and we're gonna teach you how to flirt." I don't love that montage. I've seen that montage in a lot of movies, or at least have seen parodies of those montages in a lot of movies, and I'm now kind of over that montage. I don't love the romantic gesture that he does. I'm not over grand romantic gestures. We've seen enough rom-coms that I think they can be done very well. I don't think, "let me interrupt my son's eighth grade speech and then say that his speech is bad to do my grand romantic gesture." I don't love that. And I also don't love how he handles any adverse situation, I think, at all in this movie. I'd say that anytime like a bad situation happens, he picks like the wrong way to handle it, and he's like, "that's what I'm doing." And I think at no point did that become endearing to me.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack there.
Oh, there's a lot. I know.
Yeah, no, there is.
let's start with the grand romantic gesture at the
yes.
end. I think one of the perks of this movie is it acknowledges that this is awkward.
Mm-hmm.
This shouldn't be happening, but it's happening. Mm-hmm. And he's not okay with it. Like, he's like, "oh God, what am I doing? Like, this is horrible." Whereas in like another, like if this was Hugh Grant in the 90s, he'd just be like, cut, like not even saying sorry to people. He's walking over in the crowd. It would just be like, "I'm Hugh Grant. I love this woman." Like here it's at least awkward, and it embraces the awkwardness
mm-hmm.
of the situations, which I think is something you don't see in many rom-coms. Do you sympathize at all with the Steve Carell character, who is like, the movie starts with his wife asking for a divorce?
I mean, probably too much. So I sympathize with the Steve Carell character from the second they did that whole, I hated the intro, by the way, the whole like sexy feet rubbing sexy feet. And then mm-hmm. a like smash cut to New Balance shoes in overly baggy pants. And I went, "oh, look, it's me." So like, I sympathized with him almost too much, to the point where I was like, "oh yeah, this is what I would do." Except for like the whole like learning to flirt, I would never get that far. But like, yeah, okay. I sympathize with him a lot. And you're right, the movie does kind of subvert some of those like rom-com expectations in some ways. And there's some really cool examples of that that I'll bring up at some point then too.
Okay.
Hmm.
I mean, did you like him right away? Am I like so out of left field here?
What surprised me on watching this, like I feel for him. I definitely feel for him. And I think the story does a good job of not hiding his emotions with the divorce stuff. Like
mm-hmm.
if you look at like Mrs. Doubtfire, she asks for a divorce. He's sad for a moment. And then he's just moving out here. Mm-hmm. Like you actually see him like confront her about it. Like when he's moving out, like maybe if you didn't sleep with Kevin Bacon, so I like how they address his emotional state. I think the montage of him at the bar with like just being sad the whole time gets a little much. What I was surprised by though was how much of this movie is focused on his story, because I remember like in my mind the movie is a lot more balanced between his story and the Ryan Gosling stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like it got to a point where we're over halfway through the film and my wife and I are watching it and Emma Stone goes back to Ryan Gosling and we're like, "oh, this hasn't happened yet? Like, like why did this take so long to get here?" So I was just kind of surprised at the pacing of that. Cause I think it could have been a little bit more balanced between the two main love stories.
But I like how they played off of each other, because I like that they were they were basically coming from like different angles at each other and like crossed in the middle when like Ryan Gosling called and was like, "How do I handle this situation?" I was like,
So part of the reason I like this movie, and I'm glad you brought this up, is there are so many pieces moving together at once. It's like a heist movie, because you have all these different stories coming together in little different pieces, and they all cultivate in that backyard scene. Mm-hmm. And I love that backyard scene, because everything just happens at once. You find out that Emma Stone is Steve Carell and Julianne Moore's daughter. She's dating Ryan Gosling. The babysitter's dad finds the pictures that she took, which is a cringe storyline that we're not going to get into on this. So you have like this whole big fight. Then Kevin Bacon shows up. Like, everything just happens at once. And I think it's just a great comedy of errors. And I really enjoy that scene.
So, Ryan, I mean, not having seen this movie for a while, because Alan, it sounds like you watch it pretty frequently. At least for me, the first part of this movie, not knowing how everything fit together, it felt a little bit like Love Actually. Did you get that sense as well?
I got the sense of Valentine's Day.
I've never seen that movie. Tell me about
that's
it.
It's basically Love Actually.
Mm-hmm. But on Valentine's
Day. Valentine's Day.
Good.
It's the American version of it.
Okay.
And I like, actually, this might be like 40% of the reason why I don't like this movie. I like Love Actually. Mm-hmm. I like the concept. I like the aspect of it. I like the fact that it's not set in America. I like the fact that it's set in London and the way that they did everything and the way things are interconnected. Valentine's Day is just an American ripoff of Love Actually. And it stars the punked guy.
Ashton Kutcher? Oh.
Ashton Kutcher. It stars him. And it was made in, what like, 2009, 2010?
Yeah, 2010. Ish.
Yeah, like, it was made in 2010, so it has, like, that, you know, like, feel to it. And I think Kristen and I saw Valentine's Day not too... We saw Crazy Stupid Love, not that, like, maybe like 2 weeks apart we saw these movies.
Oh, wow.
And with like the three different storylines going on and like the way that they interconnected, there was that similarity to like Valentine's Day. And I'm like, I'm not really like the scene's funny. The backyard scene is hysterical. It is funny. It is Steve Carell, Kevin Bacon, all of those actors is at their best. But it was just... I like Hitched better.
So, okay. So parts of this movie reminded me of Hitch, and I went, I'm glad we're not watching that movie. Because I think I liked this better. And I liked the backyard scene to the point where I had, like, real emotional reactions, like when like Steve Carell was like, "You're never dating my daughter," I'm like, "No, but you know he's changed." And then when he like punches Kevin Bacon in the face, I was like, "That boy!" Like, I got really into that scene. Like, that scene's what really drew me into this.
Yeah, and that like that's part of the reason I like this movie so much, is it builds to that, and I feel like it earns every moment in that scene. You earn like the reveal of Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, like, and just the look on Steve Carell's face when he sees him, like, what? Like, the two of them, like, just their back and forth. But the Ryan Gosling punching Kevin Bacon, like, another film would make that not seem earned.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this film does a great job of having it make sense that character, who's heard this name thousands of times, go up and punch this guy in the face that he's never met and doesn't really have a horse in this battle, but he really just like goes, takes off his ring and decks him one.
I don't know. I thought that was a cool scene. Did you not like it as much, Ryan?
No, I'm trying to, like I said, I'm trying to figure out exactly what I don't like, you know, with this movie. 'Cause like, I like Emma Stone. I like Ryan Gosling. I like Steve Carell. Like, I like all these actors that are in this independently, individually. I like them all. It's just, I'm trying to narrow it down. Why?
Can I throw something out that I don't like about this movie?
What?
I feel like a part of the Steve Carell story that I don't like is I feel like I've seen a lot of this been done with him in 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Oh.
Yeah. Like that, like, my favorite Steve Carell movie is Get Smart.
Okay.
Because the character he plays is supposed to be who Steve Carell is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it works. And I'm not entirely sure if I like Steve Carell in this type of a movie.
Okay.
Even though he did a good job,
Okay. So yeah. You like Steve Carell when he's like slapsticky, Maxwell Smart.
I'm more of a slapstick comedy person anyway.
Have you seen any of Steve Carell's dramatic stuff?
I've tried.
Okay.
He's like Jim Carrey to me. I can't do it.
Okay.
Oh, that hurt because I really like Jim Carrey. Some of Jim Carrey's really serious stuff.
So I made this realization by myself like a few weeks ago. I use movies and TV shows as entertainment to get away, to have fun, to enjoy and just kind of like not worry about things because I overthink about everything. I deep dive into everything. Anything that's actually going on, like in real life, I deep dive. I try to learn as much as I can. And I, you know, lessons learned and all that other stuff. When it comes to movies, it's why I'm such a big Godzilla fan. Like, give me just an entertaining movie that's not, you know, just Transformers blowing each other up. And have it be well done. And I'm good. It's, I don't really gravitate towards... We're going to make a movie that's enjoyable and teach people something.
Oh, yes. That's where we're different.
Go ahead, Devin.
Oh, I had a long conversation about the TV show Peacemaker with somebody because they were like, yeah, I mean, Peacemaker is like a tired metaphor for America. We've like all seen it before. You don't need to watch the TV show to get it. And I'm like, yeah, but like any metaphor for anything or not anything, I have my limits, but like most metaphors for anything or anything is trying to teach me something, like give me more of that. I will take that all the way.
And I think there are things like Peacemaker that has a message to it, but it's also entertaining as hell.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are things that strike a balance. If this doesn't strike a balance for Ryan, then that's fine. Like,
yeah,
to each their own. In the chat, a friend of the show, Bill, saying we should watch The Big Short, and then you said something that made him say, oh, but then you want
to watch The Big Short. I think we should watch The Big Short. I really think we should watch it. No, why?
No, because if you seriously want to turn this into a political podcast, by all means, let's do The Big Short.
See the go-to role that, like, I look at Steve Carell as a character actor.
Mm-hmm.
So you got Michael Scott, who's definitely a character, and, like, completely elevated from Steve Carell, the person. Then you have Maxwell Smart, which is based off of the TV show. So he's kind of doing a imitation and his own spin on Maxwell Smart. In this, you have him playing the guy who gets dumped at the beginning and is trying to rebuild his life. So that's the character here. I think one of his best performances as a character is in the film Foxcatcher.
Oh, wow.
Ryan, have you seen Foxcatcher?
Never even heard of it.
It's a sports movie.
That's about that wrestling Pennsylvania. I've watched like 4 or 5 docs on that. So yeah, I mean, I know a lot about that already.
I think his performance in that is fascinating, and I think we'll put that on the list.
Okay.
If you like Steve Carell and Jim Carrey, I recommend Horton Hears a Who.
These are basically the same level.
I've seen that. Yeah. Okay. To be perfectly honest, and this is also going to show a bit of like myself that makes no sense to anything that I just said. If this was animated with the same actors doing voiceovers, like an anime or something, mm-hmm. I probably would have enjoyed it more. because there would have been that break of reality where it would have been okay, this is a romantic comedy. It's got a real, you know, life cemented storyline, but when it's animated, it breaks that real life away, and I can kind of turn that part of my brain off.
Okay. So was it the parts of this movie were like too real? Because I mean, I think the more we're talking about it, the more I'm realizing I didn't like Steve Carell's character, because I'm essentially, you know, an awkward divorce in a restaurant away from being Steve Carell's character. I was like, oh, I also wear two baggy clothes and shoes that are for comfort and not for fashion. And oh no.
The only part that got like that for me was with Kevin Bacon's character, because I'm like, really? You're basically turning the stereotype of me into someone who's breaking up a marriage. Seriously?
Wait, hold on. I want to unpack that for half a second. How are you the stereotype of Kevin Bacon's character in this movie?
He wants to be shortstop for the Cardinals growing up. He makes a joke about dropping off his date at the ballet and then going to a baseball game after. Are you serious? You want me to explain that?
I feel left out, so I'm going to tell you the story about how I am Ryan Gosling in this movie. Because I actually have a story about doing a Dirty Dancing thing.
Tell me all about it.
So I think we talked about this when we did Dirty Dancing. At my wedding, Time of My Life came on, and I grabbed a bunch of my groomsmen, and we just like danced over to my wife to that song, and they're like, I don't know what's going on, but we all just like cha-cha'd over. So that's my move from Dirty Dancing. Now, Devin, part of the reason I held off on this film is you hadn't seen Dirty Dancing. What did you guys think of his big move?
It would have worked on me. 10 out of 10. You lift me up like that, you put me down wherever you want, big boy.
Ryan
loved it.
For me, it was good for the whole comic sense of like her going, yeah, no, that's not going to work. That's not going to work on me. Even knowing prior to what he was going to do, and then it kind of works on her. But that leads to one of my three favorite scenes of this movie, and that's the montage of them just talking all night. Mm-hmm. I love that. That is, like, again, top three parts of this movie for me. And particularly her sitting on the massage chair, and she's like, this is kind of horrible. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's the scene that I identify with the most, because there have been nights where my wife and I have just stayed up making each other laugh and like just talking, and like watching it this time, I was like, I kind of have that. Like that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me of like the relationship that she's in on screen isn't for you to be watching. Like, this is like, it felt way too personal. Like, I almost felt weird watching them hang out and talk and like fall in love in bed. Cause
that's one of the reasons why I like Emma Stone so much. And one of the reasons why, even though Easy A is one of my wife's favorite movies, mm-hmm. I have a very uncomfortable time watching it, because I just, it's one of those things where it's a complete comedy of errors. And just one bad thing after another. But the way that the movie goes about with her dealing with all this stuff as she's explaining it, it's like she's doing too good of a job showing how awkward all of that is.
Yeah.
So it's been a while since we've talked about this. And I, like, since Devin's first episode on here, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone's chemistry in this, I think, is a lot better than their chemistry in La La Land.
I like it better here.
And I think that's part of the reason I wasn't huge on La La Land the first time I watched it, but it's grown on me. Okay. Because I was expecting this level of chemistry in that film. And I think it's a benefit. I think it's a compliment to the script to say that their chemistry is a lot better here, because there's more story to it. Like, there's more connection there. And because of that montage, I think that montage of them getting to know each other overnight, where she's like, I know how this ends. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to get too drunk and you're going to tuck me in and kiss my cheek goodnight. And then it flips and he's the one who gets tucked in and kissed on the cheek. I think that's just a great moment and such a great relationship building scene that La La Land just doesn't really, they have a song and dance number. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, and then I am going to go for the trifecta and it's their chemistry in La La Land still better than what their chemistry in Gangster Squad. So
I've never seen it. Is it good?
I mean, me neither. I haven't seen it either, but I'm just assuming.
So Devin, you said before that like you didn't like the like traditional tropes of like him learning how to flirt and like all of that other stuff, which I kind of should have saw coming, but that has to do with one of my other favorite scenes in this like top three, and that's when Ryan Gosling is buying him clothes with, you know, Steve Carell's credit card. Mm-hmm. But the disgust of Ryan Gosling, like the wallet, the Gap comment.
Oh yeah.
And then like his reaction to Steve Carell's shoes, the New Bounds, which I completely agree with Ryan Gosling on. Just saying. but yeah, but I that just to me is like I've seen that done in a lot of other movies. I feel like Ryan Gosling and Steve Carell hit it out of the park on that one. Like it's hysterical because Ryan Gosling is just like just so disgusted with Steve Carell and his whole like fashion opinions, and he's just like, no, we're not doing that. He's like, oh, is that Velcro?
Well, there's a moment in it that I really like too, where like Steve Carell like goes to pay for something and he holds up the Velcro wallet to Ryan Gosling, yeah. And opens it really loud in his face, and he just goes, "Where are your wallets?" Yeah. Like and that so that part and his comment about the Gap where like Ryan Gosling just walks away, like those are very, very funny parts. I do really like that.
Yeah.
I think where I don't like those tropes is, I mean, because, you know, this movie did do a good job of saying, okay, we're going to do this trope, but we're going to do it in a way that, Devin, you won't hate it. So a good example is the opening montage of, like, you know, the sexy feet rubbing, and then all of a sudden it's a hard cut to, you know, two people sitting in, you know, overstuffed New Balances. And that was funny to me. Or, like, hey, you know, the second Ryan Gosling calls Steve Carell over, I'm like, oh, he's going to take him under his wing like Hitch and teach him how to love him. And I got, like, really not excited for where the movie was going, but the moment-to-moment bits of it were fun.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, I didn't... Yeah. The tropey stuff is annoying sometimes, but this movie did them well enough that I didn't hate them.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have tropes and things.
Like, you can't get around that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else we want to talk about from this.
There's something I want to bring up, but we said we weren't talking about it.
I mean, bring it up.
I hate the babysitter's decision at the end. Hate it. 0 out of 10. Bad time for everyone. don't give the pictures away. Just don't. You burn them. We live in the internet age. They were at least using Blackberries at that point. This kid could have been anyone, man. Don't give pictures away like that.
Yeah, don't take pictures like that.
also that.
I gotta get, like, we're not gonna talk about it, but like in detail. But I do love John Carroll Lynch's reaction to that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's just like right out the door going to kick Steve Carell's ass.
Zero hesitation. He knew what it was, and he was gone.
Zero hesitation. He's always a joy to watch in anything he shows up in. I still, every time I see him, I think of the Drew Carey Show because he played Drew's brother, his cross-dressing brother. But like, he's always a delight in anything. And then Kevin Bacon is in this too. So bonus points for 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Oh, fair. Right. I love John Carroll Lynch in the beginning where he was like, I know that we're friends, but we've picked sides in the divorce and it's not you. And here's something. It's cologne. There's a gift for sale. So good. Because, like, you know that happens in divorces. Yeah. It's so funny.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that helps you lead to that backyard scene where everything feels earned. Because he's had this friendship with Steve Carell for years. It's abruptly ended. And then he thinks that he's having a relationship with his teenage daughter, and he's not. But his reaction to it is genuine, because he's like, that son of a bitch. Like, I'm...
Right. Like, I would have essentially reacted the same way. Like, I totally get it. And it's... You're right. It has that history behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I just... All I'm going to say is that whenever you do anything that remotely uncovers the true awkwardness of being a teenager, it makes everyone uncomfortable and no one wants to talk about it.
I mean, well, essentially that's all their plot line was just how awkward it is to like have these feelings at this age. You don't really know what to do with any of it. And everything feels so like final and so like real, even though it's just who you have a crush on in high school or middle school. And yeah, like, I did like that.
Yeah. And to get away from that,
mm-hmm,
and still stick to one of the kids. Prime example of what, like, one of the, I didn't like the kid. I didn't like the son.
I didn't like him, like, for a very specific reason.
But the thing is, like, Kristen and I have made a decision not to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say about more than half the time, whenever I watch a movie like this and there's a kid involved, whether they be a teenager, a preteen, you know, somebody who's 9 and is running their mouth for like a side part of a joke, more than half the time, it almost ruins the movie for me.
Oh, wow.
I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm seriously not trying to be one of those anti-children people. I swear I'm not. I'm not. But at the same time, it's just like, it makes my molars grind.
So I get that. I totally get that. I think the part that made me there, that lost me on the sun is again, I saw too much of myself in him. So there was a point where he stands up in the middle of class and decides to make a proclamation. And I don't know if you guys know this, but I've done that before. I was in a math class, no, and I wasn't understanding what she was talking about. So I stood up in the middle of math class and went, "Class, I know we don't know what the teacher's talking about." And the class unanimously said, "We get it. You don't. Please sit down." And it was one of the most awkward moments of my life that
what
still makes me...
this? I'm sorry. What...
No, this was when I first moved, or when I moved back to Big Spring. So I would have been in 6th grade, I think I did this.
Oh, that's not that bad. Not that bad.
I still feel it.
Believe me, I'm sure that memory is still probably one of the most cringy things that you think about before going to bed.
Yeah.
That just makes you want to, like, you know, suffocate yourself in the pillow. I totally get it. But for clarification, that's 6th grade.
Yeah.
That's not that bad.
That makes me feel better.
In all honesty, you could have been a sophomore in high school and done that in a mixed graded math class with seniors.
Okay,
To counter that, I saw shit Devin did in high school when he was a sophomore, and it's worse than that.
It's fair. It's very fair. That was just the cringiest thing I did that year.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one last thing that I noted on this watch through is, it, if I had a nickel for every movie that Emma Stone's in that has a subplot about the Scarlet Letter, I'd have 2 nickels, which is weird that it happened twice.
It is, though.
Did
you guys read it in school? Speaking of 6th grade?
I think so. Did we? I think we did. I think it was more high school for me.
Mm-hmm. I think some of my classmates, because I was in a completely different track when it came to, like, schooling.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I was in middle school at some point, the kids in my grade read The Scarlet Letter.
Got it. It's one of those that I don't hear anything about anymore. I've never met an adult that's like, The Scarlet Letter is my favorite book. Like, you'll occasionally hear some of the classics that we read in high school, but like, movies keep using that book for some reason, and I don't get it.
Movies keep using that book for some reason. What genre are those movies in?
Probably just mostly rom-coms.
Romantic comedies.
Yeah. There you go.
With Emma Stone.
Right. Specifically with Emma Stone, yes. Yeah. So, I'm pretty sure that like, you've, was it, I think it was the first season of Picard, they actually, like, it was almost like the Picard book club. It was like every episode they introduced another, you know, like historically significant science fiction book that like set the genre. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, depending on the genre of the movie, if there's any like academic environment, it would just be easy to be like, oh, and they're talking about, you know, like, oh, they're talking about The Hatchet, and it's a movie about wilderness survival or something. Ooh. I don't know. And I hate that book. Just saying.
Oh, I hadn't thought about it in a while, and I loved that book. Oh,
I read two of the sequels.
Is it Axe and Battle Axe? Are those the sequels?
No, that was there's Brian's Winter, which is like an alternate ending. Like if he didn't get rescued right away, oh, like he has to survive the winter. And then there's a sequel called The River where he goes back to the woods and then like somebody, the person who he's with, like gets injured on their boat and he has to like help him survive like with a broken neck.
With a broken neck?
There's more to it too. Like there are more after that that I haven't read yet.
Wow.
I've got 9 Audible credits. Don't, like, I might go buy them all.
I'm sure there are better books you can spend those credits on.
I think that does it for Crazy Stupid Love.
So we're ending the movie Crazy Stupid Love on the Hatchet discussion.
Yes.
100%.
Because I see a segue and I'm going to take it. Speaking of books I could spend those credits on, Devin, what's the pick for next week and after that?
So, well done. Our transition game's on point today. So
yes, it is.
Our pick for next week and the 2 weeks following is we are going to start our Lord of the Rings marathon.
Next week?
Why is that?
Because it is
No, it's not yours next week.
It's not my next week. It's Ryan's. I'm so sorry.
Say,
Ryan.
Well, we can, okay.
So next week is Ryan's pick.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about what Devin's talking
about. Okay, perfect.
Go ahead. Ryan, what? Forget. I guess that transition wasn't good. So
we are finally wrapping up my Predator like marathon with these two guys. We're going to be going over Shane Black's The Predator, and we're also going to be talking about the new release The Prey, which is why we've been which is not really why we've been doing this Predator like push, but mm-hmm. it just ended up to work that way. So, you know, great.
I can't wait.
Yeah. So, next week we'll be talking about Shane Black's The Predator and about how a lot of people hate it, but I love it. So,
well, I'm just going to go into this with an open mind because I know that some people hate it and love it, and I just want my – because I like the Predator that I've seen so far, so I'm curious to see where it goes.
Yeah, and it's Shane Black, so you kind of know what you're getting yourself into.
Mm-hmm.
So after that,
we are going to be watching the Lord of the Rings trilogy week on week leading up to Amazon's release of The Rings of Power. Alan has never seen them, and chat – if you think for 1 second I'm not going to bring up Bakshi's Lord of the Rings, you are very wrong, because there's a lot to talk about there. And I have a soft spot for Bakshi's Lord of the Rings.
I actually just replied to that. I said, we're just going to talk about The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins by Leonard Nimoy.
Also bringing it up, there is so much gold around the Lord of the Rings franchise. But yeah, you've never seen it, Ryan or Alan. So we're watching the extended editions because it's – why would you watch any other edition, honestly?
Yeah. So – after next week, we will have 3 weeks of Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. Ryan will be with us for the Fellowship of the Ring.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be missing the Two Towers because he'll be at Disney World.
Oh,
and then he'll be rejoining us for Return of the King. Are you coming back for the Tuesday?
It all depends if I have time to watch the extended version.
Yeah, that's fair. I have the extended versions on Blu-ray. I bought them for cheap because I knew this was happening. So that'll be the one thing Lord of the Rings I have behind me. Or will it be? Maybe I have something else in my collection that I'll put behind me.
Oh, weird.
I definitely don't have the vinyl of that Leonard Nimoy song I was talking about before.
How did you get that vinyl?
Luck.
That's amazing. I'm very jealous.
Yeah. So that's going to be an exciting few weeks coming up here in August. So next week, The Predator and Prey. I should have gone with like the transition from the Brian's Winter and Hatchet things were there with Prey. I'm so flustered from my day. But it was there. We just missed it. Until then, you can find You Have to Watch This podcast on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, where we go live every week. We will be updating this video today since the sound was out for the first 20 minutes and you missed my story about League of Super Pets. So I'll be updating that here shortly. So if you missed that, check out our YouTube page for that. Or if you wanted to listen to the podcast on all major podcasting platforms, it'll be live tomorrow for you to check out. Until then, for You Have to Watch This podcast, I am Alan.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Devin.
And don't use Velcro wallets.